Daniel Kane and Patrick Murphy, former FBI agents, authored a piece in Chicago Magazine called The Day They Came for the Governor. And I believe Patrick is in our downtown Chicago studios. Patrick, are you there?
I am, John. How are you?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for coming into the studio. I'm sorry I'm not there to be with you, although I'm kind of glad I'm here as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's nice to be here, though. I'd rather be down there with you.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you and I will meet in person sometime. How is it that, as an FBI agent, you were allowed to write this? I didn't think the FBI would let its agents write a first-person narrative about arresting Rod Blagojevich.
Well, there is a process to go through. First of all, Dan and I are both retired, but there is a process we had to go through with FBI headquarters. They have to go through everything we decide to write and publish. And we got the clearance from them, but we had to wait until Governor Blagojevich, or former Governor Blagojevich, had finished his appeals before we could go out publicly.
I see. Well, the timing works out good because it was December 8th, 2008, so 10 years ago, just yesterday, that the FBI agents, it says here, assembled in the Bureau's Chicago office. And then you start to tell the story. I just wanted to walk through some of these points in the story. The two of us were the lead investigators, you and your colleague wrote, in a public corruption case that started modestly and grew exponentially. In advance of that, the FBI had set up a command center. So this is before you guys go in to get him. You set up a command center to coordinate and track all of the logistics. Imagine an area, you wrote, about the size of three conference rooms, filled with rows of computers, televisions to monitor the news, whiteboards, radio equipment, dozens of phone lines. Every detail had to be managed and synchronized. You know, I would have imagined you guys would have said, we know where he lives. We've got the warrant for his arrest here. We just pull up, knock on the door. You know he's going to be there and arrest him. It sounds much more complicated than that, huh?
Yeah, that's not atypical for any kind of more of advanced takedown. In this situation, you know, we're arresting two people, but we're also coordinating several interviews as well as search warrants. So there was a lot of different balls in the air, and it's helpful to have a command post to coordinate all that.
You wrote, as veterans of the FBI with more than 20 years each on the job, we'd both had our shares of big cases and arrests, but none like this. At dawn, we were going to arrest Governor Rod Blagojevich and his chief of staff, John Harris. The timing was hastier than we had planned. A few days earlier, Tribune reporters had contacted the U.S. Attorney's Office after getting a tip that a political insider, a close friend of Blago's, was cooperating in our investigation. The reporters had also found out that we were secretly recording the governor. The newspaper was planning to run a story. News of the leak felt like a kick in the gut. You guys wanted to figure out who that was, but you didn't even have the time. Did you ever find out who on the inside was leaking this to the press?
No, never did find out.
Huh. It had to be somebody on the inside, though, at the FBI, right?
Well, no. I mean, there were a lot of people in the loop. And again, I'm not trying to point fingers at anybody, but you had the FBI and you had Department of Justice. Because there was such an extensive approval process to do all this, that the circle of people that were in the loop was pretty large.
Yeah. And so you all were investigating him for how long?
Well, the investigation itself, which was codenamed Board Game, started in December 2003, so 15 years ago.
Five, but then that means you were investigating Blago for 5 years, right?
I would say probably about a year and a half into it, his name started popping up more and more.
What were you investigating originally?
Well, it started out as an extortion on Edward Hospital out in Naperville. The CEO of Edward Hospital at the time, Pam Davis, had come forward to report that she was being shaken down by a couple individuals that were telling her she had to hire a certain contractor in order to build a new hospital.
Really? So is that, I mean, Blago's downfall starts with that phone call from a CEO at the hospital. Is that it?
Right.
Wow. And did she know that maybe the governor was behind it? Did anybody know that that was coming from his office?
No. At the time, nobody knew. I mean, you never know where things go. I've been working corruption cases at that point a number of years, so I knew that you never know where it ends, but you don't know until you actually get the evidence. And at this case,
the investigation unfolds over years. I mean, this sounds a little bit like what happened to the Clintons or what may be happening to the current president. Once an investigation gets rolling, you don't know what's going to happen. For instance, Barack Obama had not been elected president at the time that you all started your investigation, right?
Right.
Of course not. He wasn't here. Right. So just think about how that played out, because there was Blago trying to broker Barack's old seat you know, none of that happens if the hospital isn't being shook down. And then once that starts to happen, now you're looking into that as well.
Right. I mean, there are other things we're looking at as far as extortion attempts by Rob Blagojevich, but certainly the Senate seat was something we didn't see coming, and that certainly became a major component of the investigation.
When you guys were listening in on the Blago recordings, were you shocked at what you were hearing, the way he was talking, either the language he and Patty would use or, you know, his, you know, sort of negotiations with various people about how he's got this thing and it's golden? Talk to me a little bit about what you were hearing and what you were thinking when you heard that stuff.
Yeah, what you heard on the wiretap, and the thing about wiretaps is you, first, it takes extensive approval to get a wiretap, so it's not like we just, like the FBI can go up on anybody, but when you're listening to somebody's private conversations, you get much more of an insight of the actual person, and what we were hearing on the wiretaps compared to what we saw publicly was a complete contrast.
Did it frustrate you because there he was trying to be the face of a good populist governor, elected twice, and you knew, while we're all talking about Blagojevich, you knew the truth. That must have been a kind of weird thing for you guys.
Yeah, although you're dealing with a couple agents that have worked corruption for a number of years, we're probably already jaded that a lot of this didn't necessarily surprise us per se.
So do you all know what Blago's code name was by the FBI? What would you guess? What would be a good code name for Rod Blagojevich? Go ahead. What was it?
Hair.
Hair close. Elvis. Yeah. So you write this. A tech-savvy agent provided the arrest and interview teams with audio clips of some of the greatest hits of the conversation captured on the wiretaps. So you've heard all of those things. They said, let's go ahead and put those on the agents' phones. So if when we're trying to get cooperation from other people in the case, they'll go, oh, no, you don't got the goods on Blago. You're just trying to trick me into giving you the goods on Blago, but you don't have it. And then they could say, oh, yeah, listen to this. And it was preloaded onto their phones, some of the stuff that you'd captured him saying, right?
Right, right.
That was a good idea, Jack. I mean, did that bear fruit? Was that helpful or not?
Yes, with some of the witnesses, it did. But as you can see in the article, Rob Blagojevich, he refused to listen to our greatest hits clips.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Hold on a second. There. Okay, you're still there, are you not?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. So talk to me about the arrest then. So you've got the evidence. You guys get up early in the morning. How did you coordinate going to his door?
Well, we knew he had a protective detail, so we had to resolve that issue. So we coordinated with Chuck Brueggemann, who was a high-level official with the state police, because the state police was responsible for providing protection to the governor.
Right, so here's the state police. They don't know? They don't know that he's under investigation or that you guys are about to arrest him?
Chuck was brought in the loop sometime before that, because a couple issues have popped up where we need to coordinate with the state police, but it was a very limited number of people that were in the loop.
And they were surprised, right? I mean, here, these are the guys that'll take a bullet for the governor. And meanwhile, the FBI is getting ready to arrest him, correct?
Right.
Okay. So you coordinate with these people. Take me to you guys going up to his property. How did that go down?
So it was a kind of a cool, rainy, early morning, so it was still dark. And Dan and I and another agent, Kathy, approached the door. And the plan was that Rob Grant, who was the SAC of Chicago at the time, special agent in charge, was going to make a phone call to the governor's home on basically what the state police called the red phone to let them know that there were agents at his door with an arrest warrant.
Keep going.
And so once we got to the door, The lieutenant that was in charge of the detail, Roy Sanji, placed the call on the red phone. And then I believe it was the governor that answered. And then,
if I may, the way you write about it in the magazine is you guys are standing on the outside of the door and you're calling in using that hotline, right?
Right.
So you hear the phone ringing, but he's not picking up, right?
Which we couldn't hear the phone from outside, but we knew through radio contact that they were calling the phone number and it wasn't being answered.
Okay. So then you called his other phone, right?
Right, his personal line.
Who answered then?
I believe that time, I'd have to go back and look at my own story, but I believe Patty picked it up that time, Patty Blagojevich.
And what happens then? What do you say? Who was it? Was it you or your partner?
No, actually, Rob Grant, who was in another location, was making the phone calls while we stood outside. And so initially, he hung up on him a couple times. And
I suppose you would. I mean, if somebody said, "Hey, we're the FBI. Agents are standing on the other side of your front door right now, and we're coming in to arrest you. And you guys said you've got 5 minutes to come out." Do I recall that correctly?
Right.
I'm surprised you gave him 5 minutes. I mean, so much was at stake. The timing was so detailed. You were going to give him 5 minutes to kiss Patty goodbye, put on his clothes, and come out. But you said, if you don't come out within 5 minutes, we will come in, correct?
Correct.
You would have knocked the door down or shot the lock off or whatever it is you do?
We have entry tools for that kind of thing, but we were really hoping that wasn't going to happen.
Entry tools, that's a euphemism for crowbars and great big guys.
Right.
Okay. So finally, the Blagojeviches opened the door, right?
Yes, Patty answered the door.
I'll pick up your writing of the story. The governor had about 5 minutes to open the door. The FBI did not want to cause a commotion or wake the children. Now, you spent some time in your story with your partner writing about how whatever Patty and Rod did to themselves, the children are victims here, and you tried to insulate the kids from that. Patty is, to this day, angry at the way this was handled, that you all had the temerity to come to their house when their children were sleeping in their pajamas. But you read this story from the FBI's perspective, 5 years of investigation at stake, he's on the inside. Is he going to run? Is he going to do what? You don't know. You will be as careful for the kids as you can, but damn it, you got to get the governor out of there right now. Blago says, "Is this a joke?" "No, I assure you, this is not a joke," Rob replied. Okay, I got to take a break. We'll finish the story here in a minute. It's 2:52. This is WGN. 2:55 on WGN Radio. Patrick Murphy, one of the two lead FBI investigators in the Rod Blagojevich arrest, is in the WGN Radio studios downtown. I recommend that you go to Chicago Magazine's website and read more about this. Pat's in our downtown studios. We've just got a minute here to wrap this up, Pat. There's a lot more to talk about. But when you guys then confronted the former governor, did he really say something like, "How's my hair?"
He did. We let him go into the bathroom, and we let him shut the door.
I was surprised you didn't make him keep the door open.
Yeah.
That makes me nervous, the scene where he goes into his bathroom there in the bedroom, closes the door. Who knows what's going to happen, right?
Right, right. It's not best practice.
So then, and he's brushing his teeth, for crying out loud. He comes out and says, "How's my hair?" He's got his blue, he wants to wear his blue jogging suit, the famous dark jogging suit. Patty wanted him to put on a suit, right?
Right, and that's typically, we'll take the person down in just very basic clothing because they have to go through a booking process. But we usually will tell the relative to bring a suit down for the court appearance, and we'll arrange to get them a suit.
I was surprised how little the bond was. You guys write that it was $4,500. For a case like this, why wasn't it more than $4,500?
I think we really didn't see him as a risk of flight. I mean, he was
Say
a high
pro.
He wasn't a risk of fleeing, yeah.
And that's the purpose of that. It's not punitive. It's just to make sure they show up for the next appointment, right?
Exactly.
Did he have a sense of what was happening to him and his family at that time?
You know, it was the most unusual interchange I've had or exchange I've had with an arrestee in my entire career. He just, there was a certain level of shock, but he didn't show it as much as I typically see. I mean, usually either it's someone that's a hardened criminal that has been arrested several times and it's just another day for them, or the folks that never been arrested before and they're in shock. He was somewhere in between, I guess.
He said to one of you, "Have you ever arrested a governor before? We found you wrote the question so odd, we didn't respond." Well, that's classic Blago for you. It's a well-told story, and you know, I've got more questions to ask you about FBI stuff and this stuff. We're out of time. When I get back to Chicago, I'll make more time and let you and I visit again. Does that sound like a good plan?
Sure, I'd love to meet you in person, John.
Not because I'm in any trouble, right?
I can't tell you right now.
Gee, the time's up. Patrick Murray.
You do have an attorney, though, don't you?
Goodbye, Patrick. Patrick Murphy and Daniel Kane, the day they came for the governor. Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis, let's come for them next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.